Hi, guys. Welcome back to the Cats Walk with me, Joseph Katz. I have got Tone Bell back for part two of this great interview. He is a stand-up comedian, actor extraordinaire. You have to check it out. He is talking in this episode all about working with the famous director Lee Daniels, the fabulous Andra Day, and he's giving you all his tips and tricks in fashion. Stay tuned. So I have to ask you, because I watched United States versus Billie Holiday, and I was like, I mean, that was just, it was great.
Yeah.
I mean, Andra Day, she was amazing. And I saw you in it as the club owner and looking so chic and suave and, you know,
yeah,
playing that whole role. But then the thing that really stuck out for me is, like, you're a comic, but you're playing this really tough-ass role. Like this, you know, you kick her.
Yeah.
You have sex with her pretty aggressively.
Pretty aggressive.
It was pretty aggressive, Tone. That was very aggressive.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just
day
putting
one.
It out there.
Day one.
Oh, day one.
First day shooting. Didn't know that was happening. And that's. I was
oh, like, and they're oh. like, go for
it. Yeah. I was like, wow. All right. Yeah. I guess we didn't get a chance to manscape, but let's, yeah, if we're going to do it, let's do it. And yeah, it was, yeah, different. Very different. That's actually not the role I auditioned for.
Oh, it wasn't?
I auditioned for another role, a little smaller, and they passed. And then about 2 months later, I get a call from Lee, and he was like, yo, loved your tape. We went a different direction with this role, but I got something a little dark and a little juicier. Do you think you can handle this? And he called me on a Friday. Saturday, I reread the script with that perspective in mind. And then Sunday morning, I was on my way to Montreal.
Did you do a self-tape?
Yes, before a different character. Completely different character.
So you never went in physically to go see Lee or all those people. It was all done, you self-tape. Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow. That's a big deal to be working with Lee Daniels.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
he's a big deal. Like, yeah, to be able to, have you ever worked with him?
No. I mean, other comedians have who I know, and I mean, I've talked to him about, you know, and I mean, to be honest with you, there was a part of me that was like, do you want to work with Lee Daniels? I heard he can be a hard ass, you know, and I'm not one of those actors that will, I don't get berated. And not that I've heard stories about that, but I know he's a serious director with, you know, and he gets what he wants. And, mm-hmm, and then working with him, I go, I understand him now. I get him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, but he does realize how to talk to you versus he doesn't know how to individualize his conversations per who he's working with. Cause I've had situations where I don't like how a director's talking to me in front of people. And I'm like, hey man, I'm not from here. You talk to me like this outside by ourselves. And
you'll say that to them?
Oh yeah. I'm like, you come out, I don't play that shit. Like you can talk, you're going to talk to me like a person though, in front of everybody. I've been on a sitcom where the director was like, Tone, just do this. I go, hey man, if you don't sit back in your fucking chair, put your headphones on. And if you don't like it, cut it. But this is how I'm doing it. And I just got too frustrated because he was so condescending to me that it really fucked with me. And we saw each other at the Christmas party. He goes, Tone, I know you don't really care much for, I was like, no, I think you're a great director. I just don't like you as a person. And
you know what he could have said to you, Tone, is I sign your checks.
right.
I sign your checks. So you're going to do what I, because that, you know, honestly, between you and me, when you say that, if I was in your same situation, it's like everybody wants what you're doing. Okay. So for you to be on a sitcom or whatever, everybody wants that. So I'm just thinking as you're talking, like if somebody says, you know, I want you to do it like this and you're saying no, don't you think like they can replace you?
Well, it's funny. Cause like, I mean, when that kind of came in, I still wasn't getting the respect from him because I was the sixth lead on the show. And then after testing, I became the second lead on the show.
Oh.
So they changed like the dynamic of the show. So now I'm kind of like co-lead.
Oh,
and
so you're like,
I got a little more power. And then there was a director, I actually had lunch with him this week. There's a director named Richie Keene who I became really good friends with. And between Richie Keene and Reggie Hudlin, who came in and direct episodes, I think 3 and 4, they really were like, hey man, you're not being utilized. Are you, you should do whatever you want to in these next couple takes. We're not going to put you in a box. And then people are like, oh shit, this dude's funny. We have to give him room. And then everything changed after that. So, and then when this director came back on like episode 10 or 11 or some shit, this is when I was like, oh, no, no. I spread my wings while you were gone.
Yeah.
And then he's trying to have that same energy with me. And I was like, nah, bro, we're not doing that.
Good for you.
I don't work for you. I work with you.
Right. Oh, so, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you also had, it wasn't like the first day you walked in, you
were like,
it's going to be my way.
Oh, man. You know? I mean, you know, you're kind of like, this is still surreal.
Right.
Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. You know, and then, you know, my co-star at the time she was like, if you don't like it, don't do it because that's the one they're going to use. If you don't like the wardrobe, don't wear it. Like tell them, you know, so I didn't know I had this kind of, you know, power to compromise. You know, I'm just thinking whatever they say you got to do because it happened so fast. You know, I had done, within 2 years of being here, I was on two sitcoms. I got picked up a series and a pilot that didn't go and hosted a game show. So it was like, I'm still learning in real time. I didn't even know what a stand-in was. I saw a dude dressed just like me. I'm like, who the fuck is that dude, right? Is he my replacement? I had no idea. And they're like, no, dude.
Oh, he was just being your stand-in.
He's just my stand-in. Nobody told me that. Nobody told me about a stand-in.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, why is he wearing exactly what I'm wearing? In case I fuck up, you know, and it was, they're like, no, man, like, no, when we're rehearsing, he's going to do this for blocking. I was like, all right, man, y'all need to tell people that. I basically just dropped a bus in Hollywood. Yeah, man. It was, he's the same size. Yeah. He's the same color. He's the same complexion. You know. So I was pissed.
Yeah.
And they had to kind of give me the Robert Rules of Orders around here. So the
right.
Yeah.
So working with Lee Daniels, he when you were saying he would talk to you in a certain way, he talked to everybody like that when he was filming.
I mean, he gets to know you and how you have to listen. And I mean, that's a sign of a good director because some people. Are professionally trained and some people are getting trained through. And, you know, it's mm-hmm. you know, the classes and techniques and talking to other actors and building an arsenal of suit of armor around you of what I'm good at. And so you're always chipping away at who you are as an actor. And some people have been doing this and being trained for forever, you know? So I think a good director always knows that behind you, you know, because they'll give you an example versus a technical term that I wouldn't know.
Right.
And so, but I think Lee talks to everybody how they need to be talked to versus here's how I talk to everybody. And that's a very good sign as a director. Yeah. I mean, my thing was, I think we tested each other, you know, you jab a little bit at each other and then I'm gonna spin it as a joke because that's my defense mechanism. Right.
Right.
And then he can't handle not laughing. So it's like, you tell me what you want. I'll tell you what I can. And then, so we come together and it's, we had a very good, we talked last week. I mean, he's a great dude, man. And he was like, this is why I don't fuck with comedians. Cause y'all always, and I wasn't very funny on set because usually when I have to do that, I don't like to try to have to switch back and forth. So we wrap that scene, I'm in that headspace. Right. And then once we wrap and I can kind of throw it away and go get out of that darkness, then I'll have to lighten it up for myself. But, because I mean, I've done a lot. I mean, I did August Wilson's Ma Rainey's Black Bottom in college. I've done a lot of, you know, darker parts and stuff like that, but never, you know, never on film. And to be trusted with Lee, you know, having me do this was interesting, man. It was.
That was an intense role. I mean, for you, I mean, that would just watching it and I bet working with her, what was that like? Interesting.
Oh,
she's
man.
New to it too. I mean, this was her big yeah. role.
I mean, and that's why I think we got so close. I mean, I talked to her yesterday. I mean, she was so in it. You know, I watched a couple of playbacks from days prior when I got there. I want to see what she's doing. And then by the time we got into our first, luckily, I mean, I love when directors do this, but the first time Billy and John meet is the first scene that Andrew and I shot. So we got a chance to meet on screen and on set pretty much immediately. And as we're setting up for the second shot, her and I go have a smoke and just, you know, these are the, you know, we just get close and cause I mean, we're essentially about to have rough sex on camera, you know? So we got a chance to, I mean, bond quicker than we expected. And then even in that fight scene, we decided to do it ourselves, even though we had stunt people there.
Oh, to kick, where you kicked her?
Yeah.
That scene?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the whole, you know, the whole fight. And there are actually a couple other scenes that I think will be in the director's cut. That just for time we had to lose, but yeah, I mean I would say it gets worse, or that you actually watch the buildup of that, I mean and we've told the story before, so I don't mind saying it, but I mean literally during that scene, it's crazy to say and to rewatch. I won't watch it because it gets very difficult to. I haven't watched it yet, but it's when my character kicks her, my left foot slips, which is why when he kicks her in the stomach and they cut back to her, she grabs her mouth because we literally had a snafu on the set where my left foot and kick her in the face. And
we did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she ended up busting a lip. I ended up busting a lip on the front of my shoe. It wasn't like a kick, but so far as I slipped and she was rolling toward me and it was crazy. So the end of that scene was exactly what happened. She didn't break, so I didn't break. And that's what happened. Like those, it was wild. It was wild.
Did you feel like, oh crap, I hurt her?
Yes.
Or no?
Yes, very much so. It was like, I'm telling you, like when you see her roll over and she goes, oh fuck, and she stays in it. It was 2 seconds of me that breaks and makes sure she's okay. And then she leaned in. She leaned in to like staying committed. So it was like, I gotta stay here with her. So we get that whole thing, and then, you know, my character exits and then Lee says, cut, we got it. Running right back in there, like, yo, what? Are you good? And we, you know, we hugged it out and we, you know, we cried and everything. Oh, and then I had my assistant send some flowers of like, hey man, because I had to go out of town and shoot something else and then come back and finish the movie. But it was, and then we got, I mean, ironically, we got super close because of it. I mean, one of the hardest parts for, I think, both of us to shoot and then in the film. And then, I mean, we talk every other day now.
Wow. Because I would think instinctually you'd go, oh my God, wait, cut. Let's see if she's okay. But you stayed in the moment because she stayed in the moment. And then when you cut, then you checked on her.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a movie I did just prior to that called Sylvie's Love where Namdi, we had a fight scene that actually gets cut from the movie, but he literally punched me in the jaw. We got so close, he punched me in the jaw and he was about to break and I stayed in it. And so he stayed in it. And then they didn't even use the goddamn take.
After all that, you subjected yourself. Yeah, you got hit. You put physical harm. You put yourself in physical harm. Wow. You know, talking about this, did you ever go to acting school? Do you have an acting coach?
I do. There are a lot of actors that I go to for advice and that who have been in the game for a long time of just, you know, wanting to take. I mean, you know, I'm on the road so much that like taking every Saturday class. Right. Probably this year will be the first time I get a chance to do that. Like because I'm on tour so much. So I do pull veteran actors to the side and, you know, they work with me. And if I need something, but, I went to college for, you know, TV and film and minored in theater, but like I said, it wasn't like a theater school, but it was a very good program, but not a very big program. So I wouldn't say trained as much as I dabbled in it. And then, now that I'm peers with people that I admire, they do help out a lot. So, you know, they'll do scene work with me and try to get there. But it's also difficult because the freedom that you have on stage sometimes helps with that too. You don't want to be so boxed in, you know? Right. So it's a little bit of both. I mean, I've found that a group setting in a class isn't really my thing. Not that I wouldn't do it, but it's just like a lot of times those are on Saturday mornings and I'm doing 30 weeks a year on the road. So, you know, I got to go to a buddy's house on Tuesday and workshop, you know, my guys who are, I don't want to name drop, but just some friends who are doing some very, very great work right now will sit down with me on a for a couple hours and we'll just work stuff out and they'll give me the tools that I need to hopefully excel further.
Oh, so you're not going to like a literal acting coach?
Have I? Yes. But as things progress and, you know, getting busier it's like, I got to take advantage of the time that these people have and the knowledge that they have because unfortunately, like if I'm trying to do an 8 to 10 week course, I haven't had that because I'm also working on a special, you know, so I need those weekends for comedy. So it has been a tough divide.
Like for this, United States versus Billie Holiday, did you go work with a coach to get prep for this role?
Literally got the call on Friday, reread the script Saturday, and then flew to Montreal Sunday. And was on set Monday working.
Holy crap.
So it was a, you know, learning Saturday, packing and everything, Sunday on the plane, setting intentions and all that kind of stuff. And then watching on Sunday and talking to the producers and stuff. And then I think my call time on Monday was later in the day, but I went first thing. So I could like watch what was happening. Let me get in the mood and let me see some playback. And cause I'm jumping into something. And then, I mean, I think they did start me out where we should have started. you know, just like who this guy is up front. Charming guy, assertive guy. Definitely always something swimming, and you know, he's playing the role of how do I keep my club open and deal with this, but also make her think she needs me, you know? So it's you know, playing that double side thing of, so yeah, I mean, but I needed to see where we were and what this narrative was, and talking to Lee and the producers and Tucker and all the guys, and just to, what do we want from this dude? Cause there's not a lot of info on him. They're two John Levy. So like I could look him up, but one wasn't the musician and the other one was a fucking shyster. Right, you know, right, so it's right. There's not going to be a whole lot of articles on this guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's underground for a reason. So it's talking to Tyler and talking to Rob Morgan and Divine and, you know, everybody, and just trying to get a sense of where we are and like I said, watching the playback on what they've already shot and getting the feel of it. And something really does kind of transform you when you put on the fashion from that era, you know, the hard shoes and the wool and the sock garters, and it makes you, it drapes you different. So your posture changes and it, you know, it kind of, and to me, that's very important. It's like, I got to grow with inside this thing versus, you know, this doesn't feel like the sweatsuit I'm wearing now. It's like, it's, right. You know, I mean, you know, those old school coats, those fucking coats are heavy as shit. I mean, it's like lead lined wool. You know what I mean? The coat is 40 pounds. Right. You know? So it's like, you know, you get that on you, it makes you walk different and you know, that tie bar and just, you know, the hair and everything, you know, you get a chance to like dive into your look and you know, I'm thinking about movies that I've seen before with in this era of you know, the hand in the pocket and you know, you reaching here for the cigarettes and you know, what's the mechanics of this dude, and you got to walk in those shoes for a little bit. So yeah, I mean, it definitely happened quick, but everybody was gracious enough to go, here's where we are. This is what you need to catch up to, because they had been shooting for a month and a half already, I think. So to kind of come in as the new guy, because there was somebody else cast in that role already. And then Lee was like, I performance-wise and look-wise, I don't think this is, and it wasn't that he wasn't good. And Lee told me, he's like, no, the dude was great. I just, for some, it doesn't feel like who should be playing it. So he called me, he was like, I know you're a comedian, but he goes, it's something dark in you that like, I want to extrapolate. I want to pull out. Let's get there. And it was different. It's different having to be comfortable putting your hands on someone first and expressing yourself verbally second. Like when that's the, you know, usually you build to that, right? And then when you have to be okay striking first and then making your point verbal, it's just a weird place to be in. Like it's you know, it's not comfortable.
Right. Well, it's not what you're used to probably. Like that's not how we're kind of trained to do. We talk about it and hopefully we never get to that point where we lay our hands on somebody that, you know. Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. So that guy shot it already and then got replaced by you. No.
He never shot. That's.
Oh, he never shot.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, yeah, he never, you know, I guess they, you know, they put together the look and everything. I guess they rehearsed, but it just wasn't what.
Oh, it didn't feel it.
Yeah. I mean, Lee is a very feelings. He's like, this is like, not that it's not good, but this is not what I imagined. And I need some, you know, and I'm just glad he trusted me with it. You know, I mean, I definitely gotten those calls over the last few months of, yo, man, I didn't even know that was you at first. You know, it's, you know, we used to seeing you, you know.
Comedy.
Funny. Yeah.
Right.
Subtly funny. And this is very in your face and violent and treacherous, you know.
Wow. That's why I'm saying when I talk to other actors and comedians and other people, they always say, oh, I worked for like a month with a coach and we strategized and we put our intentions and we did this and we, you know, so to hear you say like you had to turn it around within 2-3 days.
Yeah, 48, 72 hours, something like that. But it was, I mean, luckily, I mean, I shot over two periods. So I did about 2 weeks and then I had to go shoot, I had to play Richard Pryor for American Soul on BT. And then I went back to Billy. And so it was actually a nice break to be like, let me let me do something fun. So they, the production company got me in the middle, and then I went back to Montreal. Luckily I had days in between, you know what I mean? Like I got a chance to pick Lee's brain and the producer's brain. And like I said, watch some stuff. So it was, but I, you know, I studied while I was there versus like having time to do it. And but they gave me plenty of playbacks and like, here's where we are. And, you know, new drafts of the script are coming in and Lee was like, I want you to know everything. And then he changes everything. He's like, learn this. And then like, we'll work it out. And then next thing you know, we're crossing out. And what do you want to say? This is how it should be. And it's very much you. It's very much, you know,
how you put your own signature.
Well, no, I mean, we work it out together. It's you know, we sat down and what does this feel like? Either he gives an example or I give an example or I'll pitch something, he'll pitch something. And it's like, yeah, that feels right. That feels like how dirty and grimy this dude is. Cause the how I deliver this is what Susie Lowery Parks wrote. And then, you know, him editing a little bit. And then it's like, you know what? I think we should go with something like this. You know, I mean, a lot of it is in the moment. I mean, a lot of it wasn't on the page and we just kind of throw it out there, you know, and it's, and that's, you know, when Lee is happy, Lee is happy. And when Lee is like, we didn't get it. He's like, nope. But then when you get it, he's like, yes, motherfucker. Yes. That's that shit right there. I mean, it's like, and so, you know, he's like a proud dad and you feel good. Cause like, in the moments you feel terrible is when, you know, especially for my character, the moments you feel terrible, it's like, we got it.
That's good.
Yeah. It's like, you got to take a lap to go like, all right, I need to get out of this headspace.
You work like nonstop. You're like, wait, I'm shooting this, but then I'm doing that on the weekends. And then I come back and do that. I'm like, you're working.
It's been a good, I mean, this year will be 10 years in August.
Oh, wow.
And it's been a great ride. It's been a great ride. You know, from comedies to silly comedies to, you know, romantic comedies and dry comedies and some procedural stuff and getting a little more drama now and some harder stuff to watch. Yeah, it's been great, man. You know, it's nice to diversify it and you know, if, I think, especially with all my peers, I mean, people put in so much work and I'm proud of everybody and just glad to get the opportunity, really.
Hey there.
I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema,
our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe?
Do we even care if they are?
We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com.
See you soon.
What would you say to a comedian now that's like, God, I've been working these shows. I've been at the Comedy Store. I've been at the Laugh Factory. I haven't gotten this opportunity. What would you tell that person?
Man, you have to stay the course. You have to stay the course. I mean, you might want to change up the technique, but stay the course. I mean, like, this is where it happens. I mean, I don't know. Now, 2 years ago, I probably would have said something different, but now, I don't know, I'm still trying to figure it out too. I mean, it's the landscape has changed of where you can live because everything is, you know, I mean, I've had a few Zoom auditions and I can't stand that process. You know, I think you got to put your best foot forward, but you can't just put any foot forward. So if you don't feel comfortable with it, don't do it. I mean, because now you just got this shitty tape out there for a project that you really wanted. But, you know, I think you have to roll some dice and be uncomfortable. You know, it's maybe what you were doing isn't working. So how can you shock yourself and them, but also be who you are? And it's you know, there's a lot of, I don't know, man. To me, a lot of, especially stand-ups who cross over into acting, get uncomfortable. Man, comedy's not always funny. You know what I mean? Like, I think eventually you'll get there. You know, sometimes the laugh doesn't come on the bit that you wanted. So you just got to, I mean, I remember doing a bit for like 6-8 months. It just was getting nothing. But it's like, I believed in it. It's like, I got to, something's here. Something's here. Mm-hmm. And it was nothing mm-hmm. better than another comic going like, dude, I don't think that bit works. And I was like, oh, you don't think I can make that bit work? And it was a challenge.
Oh, and then you did it.
And then a few months later, it started. I was like, that fire came. And it was like, oh, you're telling me I can't do something?
Right.
And I love the proving someone wrong. So I think you have to get uncomfortable a little bit. You know, it's what you have been doing is probably great. But what's that next step? Mm-hmm. Can you be comfortable mm-hmm. in trying to do something that's you but slightly different so people see you a little different?
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. Like you did for the showcase. Like you kept working at it.
I mean, even now, like I'm getting into some darker stuff that I think is, you know, a part of me, but it's not. I mean, you said it earlier. It's. I mean, I'm actively going to talk about. I mean, there's been police guns in my face 4 times in my life. You know what I mean? So I have a very mm-hmm. difficult relationship with the police, not just from what I see, but what I've experienced. You know, like mm-hmm. I've had I have an arrest tape. I was on Bad Judge on NBC, and I went home to my homecoming. Went to Savannah for my college homecoming in 2000, I guess I was 13, and got arrested that weekend. And
for what?
I didn't put on a blinker. One officer drew his gun and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, cool, I'll get in the car. And then I was like, hey man, I'm just an actor, I'm a comedian. I was doing a Comedy Central event and then went to, we were on hiatus that week and, went to Fort Lauderdale for a Comedy Central event, drove up and had a beer and a drink with my college roommate. We had dinner and I was driving a mile away to my hotel, got pulled over for no blinker, 2-lane street, didn't put my blinker on, empty, fucking empty street. And then the cop mm-hmm. goes, you had anything to drink? I go, yes, I drove 9 hours, just had a beer with my college roommate, but I'm going right here. Very coherent. I've watched the tape. I have a copy of it. And then try to get me to resist. And I go, I'm not, put me in the car, man. I will go to jail. I don't know the last time a black man has said, take me, I'll go. And then they take me off camera and then force me to get in the car. Although you've already heard me say, I will get in the car. I have no problem getting in the car. And it's crazy, man. It's like, I don't know. Even listening to the tape, it's hard to watch it, but you go, I'm not, how much could I not be resisting? I'm definitely not resisting. You know, but you play it through your head and you're trying to make sense of it, but it doesn't.
So you have it on tape because you had a drink that they wanted to take you in?
Well, I mean, if you admit to, they're going to take you in for DUI. And I was like, I have no problem with that. But
they can give you a test right there, can't they?
Yes.
Like
I did the field sobriety test and everything. I go, all right, if I failed it, then great. I'll go to jail. I have no problem with that. And then still fought me on it. I mean, dude, this arrest lasts probably an hour. Even though I was like, hey, man, whatever y'all want to do, I'll go. I mean, at this point, this is like 8 months after, maybe 10 months after Trayvon Martin was murdered. So this, I mean, it was, you know, I'm already, you know, and I mean, I'm in Georgia, you know, and I'm from here, but it's like, dude, I used to fucking own this town. I used to throw parties and I knew the mayor. And I'm just coming back from school. I was like, I'm not lying about having a drink. Yes, I did. But I was like, clearly I'm not. And I watched my field sobriety test. I'm like, man, I nailed the nose.
Yeah.
I nailed it. This straight line. How many times you want to do this? I will walk the fuck out of this line. And they were like, you failed. Wow. And I was like,
and
no
you,
problem.
You passed it. You passed.
I passed. And my mom works for the governor's office of highway safety.
And they still took you in.
Still took me in. I spent 14, maybe 18 hours in jail. And they impounded my car, all this kind of stuff. And even one of the guys in the office knew who I was. Even when the guy that processed me was like, they tried to take my mugshot and I turned my head because I was like, y'all are not going to make me look like fucking Lindsay Lohan out here. I was like, because I smiled in my mugshot. And I was like, I'm not fucked up. I'm like, I'm very sober. And let me tell you, to do 14 hours or however many hours I was in jail with a bunch of drunk people and you're sober is fucking brutal.
Right.
Everybody else is getting great
sleep.
Like,
give me a drink.
Everybody else is getting great sleep. I'm sitting there sober like, God damn, this sucks.
Yeah.
But I mean, just just to even hear that, to hear the scuffle of compliance, and then and it doesn't mean anything. But it's hard. It's hard to watch this shit, man.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh my God! Wow. It's interesting for people to hear your story. That's an interesting. You know. That's a.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that story because I never heard about that with you. I don't know if people know about that, that it happened to you.
And it,
so I'm
and
glad
it sucks,
you said
man.
That.
I got back to work, and I think that same director was like, "Are we ready to work?" I was like, "Eh, well, nobody's gonna ask me why I got arrested this weekend." Because I posted my mugshot on Instagram. My agent was like, "Take this down." And I was like, maybe they think it was just a regular stop. But I mean, even years later, I go, nobody gave a fuck that I went to jail this weekend.
Yeah. Like, can we have a moment?
Like, in jail was the easiest part. It was like, you know, because I really didn't watch, you know, to be completely honest with you, I never had watched the DVD because my buddy from college was the ADA in the city and knew the judge. And the judge's wife happened to like the show that I was on. And then even rewatching the tape after, you know, what happened last year to George Floyd, I rewatched my tape and noticed things I had never seen before of just how much they invoked or tried to get me to resist. And I wasn't, but it was, I mean, the scuffle at the end of the tape when they take me off camera is I put it on my Instagram. Like I put leading in from like a clip and then going like, I put it on my special of what had happened, but here's the visual, you know, and it's tough to watch, right, man. It's difficult.
Yeah, of course.
So.
Wow. It's interesting. I'm glad you said it because it's like, it's good for people to really know because, you know, we hear so much and we get inundated with stuff and then it's like, it's good to just know like what you went through. And,
it's correct. I mean, I'm on billboards at this point. You know what I mean? I'm doing interviews for TV. I'm talking to E! And Extra and Entertainment Tonight and all this kind of stuff. And then I go away for one weekend for a Comedy Central event and get fucking locked up and who knows what else could happen, you know? So.
Jeez. Did was there publicity around it that you did or not really? It was quiet?
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe they wanted to hide it.
And I didn't end up getting a DUI and they let me go, but of course the system still got me because it cost me 17 grand to.
It cost you 17 grand?
17 grand. Said and done between lawyer fees and community service and AA meetings and all these classes and all these, you know, all this kind of stuff, permits. And I mean, because had I gotten charged with what they were trying to give me, I'd be a felon and I wouldn't have been able to do Billie Holiday. Think about that. You can't work in Canada as a felon.
Wow. And that's all because you had a drink and you didn't do a blinker.
Put me up before a blinker. Wow. Asked me if I had anything to drink. I was honest.
And
then, I mean, just even watching, like, so watching the tape and seeing this cop unholster was like, fuck, man, I never knew that in real time.
Right. Wow.
Yeah, dude, yeah, nuts.
Wild. Yeah, I guess that's, you can draw on your darkness from all of those kinds of experiences, right?
I mean,
right?
I got tons of dark experiences.
Well, on a lighter note, talking about fashion.
Yes.
You talked about, we of course, we leave it till the very end because you got to save the best for last. But you talk about on Billie Holiday, how you put on that suit, you put on that, and it gave you that feeling, right?
Yeah.
You know, so, and fashion really does that. It really, I feel like people, it's an expression of yourself. I talked to a lot of people about that and, you know, people work with stylists like myself to help them bring out that. But I feel like you kind of have your own vibe. I got pictures from your agent, which looks super fashionable, very chic, and that little vest and the white shirt and the sneaker. Yeah, you know, like, how would you say, tell me about your style. What is your vibe? Is it?
You know what? I think I would define me as kind of a chameleon because I don't have I kind of, whatever I'm feeling then, you know, whatever I'm feeling right now is kind of what I put on. I like, you know, I like a funky pair of slacks and, I like to roll my sleeves up and I like a blazer and a bow tie, suspenders. And then again, I like a nice slim sweatsuit and I like wearing a nice boot with a denim jacket. I like having a piece, you know what I mean? Like it's that kind of, like right now I wear this denim jacket with a bunch of pins from places I've visited and people and fans bring me pins to put on my jacket. So it's almost like a walking postcard almost, you know? So people get to ask me where these are from and they're from all over the world. And it's kind of like how I feel in that moment. I mean, I have kind of a stand-up uniform. you know, and then it's, you know, it's my, so I mean, I don't know. I feel like I wear a suit just as well as I wear a sweatsuit. And, you know, when it comes to my bathing suits, you know, I'm the European cut now, like a little higher, you know, I like to show these thighs off, you know what I mean?
Oh, you want to show, yeah.
Yeah.
We saw some of that in Billie Holiday.
Yeah, a little bit of that,
Yeah, we saw a little bit from behind, yeah. Mm-hmm. You shared some of that with us, Tone. Yes, you did.
And I'm a big shoe guy, man. I like my sneakers and I like my boots. But I work with usually Quentin Thrash is my stylist for most stuff. And another dude named Apuje, who's a frat brother of mine. And what I love about a good stylist is when they know what they would do, but also know what you would do. Now I want to put out all this, but this is what I would do, but how much of this flair or, you know, kind of, what are you calling that? Like bespoke kind of vibes of, you know, how much dandy do you want to be? And because even when I did the red carpet for Little, I still looked like I was doing Sylvie's, you know, Love with the hair parted and the clean mustache. And I was like, well, we have to lean into this look. There's nothing else I got. So we did like a real slim, you know, turtleneck with it. It was dope. It was super dope.
Wow.
And so, I like doing stuff that doesn't look like I could pull it off.
You push the limit a little bit. Yeah. I see you wear fitted a little bit more, which I actually like because I feel like guys sometimes go away from fitted because they're like, you know, they do the untucked shirt and make it a little bit loose because I want to be comfortable. But you can still be comfortable and have something fitted.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love a good, nice, you know, I wouldn't say tight, but tailored to, like, I can only wear this, you know, it's fit for me. And luckily, man, I'm for the most part, I mean, when I go to wardrobe, they love me because I'm pretty much, what do you call it? Mannequin size?
The model size or the sample size.
Sample size. Usually. I'm usually pretty sample size. So it's very little tailoring to make it.
Oh, that's great. Know?
They do a really good job with me and it's usually super simple, but I, you know, have learned how to talk to wardrobe now to go, you know, I want to bring these up a little bit. Can you make this like a, you know, 6 3/4 inch cuff? And you know, through working with Thrash and Apuje, I'm just what I'm comfortable with to you know, this can't be too tailored because he's not that, you know, this guy isn't that put together, but he can't be shabby, you know. So you don't want to, like, I've been on stuff where I just gotten stuff from Top Man and tailored a little bit, and I'm wearing the same suit as another actor on the red carpet, but they look totally different, you know. So you know, sometimes you don't want to wear the big names, you just want to go, look how fly I can make this.
Right. You can just make it your own, really. What advice would you give to somebody that goes, God, I like Tone's style. Like, he's got a cool vibe. Like, I see him on the red carpet, but I saw a stand-up special. I like, you know, what are some of the tips you would give?
Man, I think you just got to own it, man. I mean, the way you have confidence in your set and in what you deliver and a punchline that you know is going to come is the same way. You know, like, I wouldn't do stand-up in a suit. I don't think doing stand-up in a suit works for me. But I do think, like, for Steve Byrne, who kills a black suit with a white shirt and black tie, that's his style. Like, it looks great on Steve, you know? But I think, you know, the way you're comfortable in your material and what you know you're going to deliver, it's like, be that. I mean, I like to deliver to blue-collar people, white-collar comedy. You know what I mean? Like, and I like to mix it up. It's like, I'm not far removed from either.
Yeah.
And so it's, I mean, I think you got to be comfortable in your style. So, you know, if it's a slimmer jean, if it's a, you know, different kind of boot, it's, I just got some Red Wing boots. I'm trying to break them in now because leather is still like, you know, I just wear them around the house until I can break them in. But it's, I think you just got to be comfortable and hey man, it's okay to try something.
Right.
You know, got to be gradual, though. Don't be wearing all sweatsuits one day, and the next thing you know, every day you're wearing a tuxedo. That's ridiculous. Like, evolve.
Yeah, take it easy.
Evolve
take it easy.
A little bit.
Yeah.
What are
some of your favorite brands? Like, what do you love? Like, I saw in one interview you wore Givenchy.
Yeah. That was from Wardrobe. It depends on what style, but I mean, if I'm going to purchase, I like All Saints a lot. Just because I'm very casual. I like Couples a lot.
I could see you in like Fear of God. Do you know Fear of God?
I do have some Fear of God stuff. I'm a big Adidas guy, but
it's a little pricey.
It's, you know what? I wear like Le Tigre and, you know, Elise and I mean, really, because I got out of corporate not to have to wear pants a lot.
Right.
I want to wear sweats. If I'm not on, I'm casual. But, you know, I'll throw my Allstate jean in my jacket and I'll throw like an off-white hoodie or, you know, one of these or the Tigray kind of throwback 80s stuff. Just, I mean, a lot of stuff I wear now is stuff I couldn't afford growing up. So I'm just kind of going backwards and
good.
Pleasing myself with shoes and clothes that Val and Mike couldn't afford.
That's right. Why not? Yeah. You deserve it. Yeah. You get it. You've done the work for it. So, well, that's great. I like to know because I like to give like good advice about style and I talk about it, but I like to hear from people that are on the carpet or performing and all
that.
I got buddies
who do, you know, a lot of like the bow tie you're wearing who do, you know, ties and tie bars and pins and brooches and pocket squares and PSC pocket square company. Is some friends that, I mean, most red carpets I've ever hit where I'm wearing a tie and a pocket square is from them. And they do a wonderful job, you know, and they just, I like supporting other dudes with dreams and you know, who have come from nothing, you know? And so, I mean, even Thrash, my buddy Thrash, who styles me a lot, has gotten into home decor, pillows and drapes. Oh. And he just has a crazy, unbelievable sense of style.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, these are actually my bow ties.
Oh, you have your own line of bow ties?
These are my own line, and so we make them bigger. So I'll have to send you one. You can wear them one time on the carpet. I have all different kinds.
I love a funky bow tie.
I love funky. I like a statement, a fun, bigger, you know, bow. These are about 4-inch bows, so they're bigger than your traditional because traditional is a little smaller.
Yeah. But, I like that.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Well, I've taken so much of your time. I want to ask you one very last question. I keep saying I take all your time and then I take more of your time.
No.
See, it's a trick.
Yeah,
it's
nothing but time. Look at this. That's why I brought my mason jar instead of like a regular glass.
Oh, that's right. My very last question to you is, what advice would you give someone, something that you haven't told anybody, but you think would help somebody else?
Well, if just anybody, not an actor, not a comedian.
Yeah, just anybody would help anybody. It could be a kid in school. It could be a working adult. It could be an actor, anybody. Something you haven't told anybody.
This is going to be, it's going to sound very mundane or minuscule, but I will say the way we live today and like how much technology is out here, try it, but I turn off every notification on my phone. The only thing I get is phone calls and possibly text messages, but like every app popping up, every notification, it I don't think it allows you to free your mind to live as much because you're always doing this. So I don't have a bunch of shit popping up on my phone all the time. So it doesn't break my concentration as much. So it's because it can be very, very scatterbrained. If you have Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and, banking apps and games and all kinds of stuff, if something's popping up, emails popping up on your phone all the time, it's you're constantly, you know, looking down or trying to find out what's going on in here and you're missing a lot of out here. And so I literally, the only thing that comes through on my phone is a text message and phone calls. Everything else I have to go look for purposefully. But I mean, even now, like I don't even know where my phone is. I have no idea. Like I plug it up and I leave it across the room and I'll check it in a couple hours. But I am not going to be a slave to my phone notification. So, I mean, just so you don't forget how beautiful this is.
Right.
So I guess that's my advice.
That's really good. Yeah.
I know it's not funny or whatever, but.
No, it's good. It's actually good because it does take us away from the moment of this, you know, of connecting with somebody.
I mean, I don't even take my phone on set. Like people, you don't have a lot of behind the scenes photos. It's like, I leave my phone on my trailer. I don't take my phone on stage. I don't take it on set. It's very rare. If I have my phone on set, it was by accident. I probably just got off a phone call and just had it with me, but I do not. Mm-hmm. I live in the moment. Like I want to experience these people and get to know them. And that's everybody from the PAs to my co-stars. I don't let that be a distraction.
I know it's so hard. This is dating myself, but it's like when everybody is like, document everything that you do, you know, everybody wants you to document what you do. I did this, I'm doing this, and now I'm posting it and people are approving of it. And it becomes a whole cycle of like, you just get, and it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. And before you know it, that's all you're doing is, staying on social.
A couple years ago, I just went to my kind of my Instagram being mostly just kind of what I'm doing work-wise. I don't do a lot of my personal life on Instagram just because I should have some sort of, you know, I wouldn't, privacy. Like I'm not keeping me away from you to be a secret. It's just, it's, I want to do stuff that I want to do and you don't have to know about everything. You know, it's
but everybody wants to know.
If you want to know, I'll talk about it, but like, ask me a question, call me. But,
but yeah, right, right.
But I don't have to put it out there. So you're just like, oh, it's okay. Tell them to laugh. You know, it's call me.
Yeah.
And I love having, you know, so yeah, that it may be seem small, but I think it goes a long way.
No, I think it does. I think that's great. Well, Tone, you have been fabulous. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being on the show.
I want that bow tie for real, though. Send me a bow tie.
I will. You know, I have a bunch of different ones, and I have some really funky big ones, and they're fun for the carpet. You would look good in it.
I've only worn a bow tie a few times, but I like them. Yeah, I do dig them.
Yeah, it'll look good on you. Yeah. So, wonderful, Tone. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Absolutely, man. Thank y'all for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Cats Walk. Make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app. This has been a production of Evergreen Podcast. A special thank you to executive producer Gerardo Orlando, producer Leah Longbreak, and audio engineer Dave Douglas.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Burn the Boats from Evergreen Podcasts. I interview political leaders and influencers, folks like award-winning journalist Soledad O'Brien and conservative columnist Bill Kristol, about the choices they confront when failure is not an option. I won't agree with everyone I talk to, but I respect anyone who believes in something enough to risk everything for it. Because history belongs to those willing to burn the boats. Episodes are out every other week wherever you get your podcasts.